You're listening to Ecto Portal, a journey into the unknown with Anthony Anderson and Verna Wilson.
I hope that you are seated comfortably with the light turned down and the curtains drawn.
Once again, to another journey into the unexplored, the unexplained Ecto Portal. I'm Anthony Anderson, your host, and I'm here with my co-host,
Verna Wilson. Hi. Hi, everybody.
Hi. Hey, guys. We have another great live interview with John Stanley this week. We talked about John's career before, being on Creature Features as host, author, screenplay writer, filmmaker. He's done a lot. He's done a whole lot.
Yeah, he's a busy guy, and he's still very busy.
Very busy. And he has an event coming up April 13th at the Orinda Theater at 11 a.m. He's showing his film Nightmare in Blood. Tickets are $15 each. If you go to creaturescon.com, you can purchase a ticket for that event. He'll be there live in person answering questions on stage. We'll see his movie, and he'll be autographing and selling his books in the lobby if you want to pick up one of his live books. If you ever saw Creature Features, this is your moment to meet the man.
Oh, yeah. If you grew up with Creature Feature, folks, don't miss this one.
Meet the man, meet the legend.
Absolutely.
So that'll be a fun event. So that's who we have on this show this week. We have a pretty long interview with him, which was pretty good. We talked about the Bay Area. We talked about his career.
It was a great interview. We had an interview with him a few years ago, 7 years ago to be exact.
Yeah, seven years ago.
And this time we covered more of his film and writing career. And last time we covered him as a TV host for Creature Features. So you can go to our former interview and you can look forward to this one as well.
Go to ectoportal.com and look in the archives.
Yeah.
It'll be there. I think it's on the very bottom. I just added it. So that's on there. And all our other, of course, past shows are on there. And all our current shows are on there.
That's archives. Right.
So
yeah, lots to navigate through.
Yep. Ectoportal.com. It's your gateway to everything that we've done, everything we're doing, everything we're going to do.
That's right.
So what did you do this week, Verna? Anything?
Nothing exciting. I'm just taking care of an animal that's going through an illness, and that takes up a lot of time.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, there's the usual, trying to find time for your own hobbies. I write, and
macrame,
I also try to
knitting.
Oh yeah, of course. I wish I knew how to do macrame. I don't. I don't know. I don't think I know anybody who knows how to do that.
I'd make you make me a hammock if you could.
You
macrame.
Know, when I was growing up, people knew how to do that.
Really?
Yeah, they did. And actually, you know, Linda knows how to knit.
I don't know Linda.
Okay, folks. Linda's my sister, and she used to be a regular on this show.
Yeah, I know who Linda is.
But she actually.
Hi, Linda.
Hi, Linda. But she actually knows how to knit, and she does pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, she does great.
Wow.
She's a great knitter, yeah.
She's going to make me a hammock. No, just
she
kidding.
Should. She should make
I
you
have
a
nowhere
scarf.
To put a hammock.
She should make you a scarf and some socks, actually. But actually.
I mean, it's so easy for you to commit her to these things, because it takes a while.
Yeah, Linda. You're going to make Tony a scarf and some socks.
Yeah, apparently Vern is hiring you out for your new jobs for free.
There you go.
She's such a nice sister.
Yeah. So, Linda, you heard. But actually, you know, you try to find time to do your hobbies in between.
Yeah.
So I work, try to do my writing, try to do some artwork in between.
Yep.
And then, but you know, when you have an ill animal, it takes up your time, and you love that animal, you do the best you can.
Just make them comfortable and get all the love you can while they're still around.
That's right. And yep. And what about you? What did you do this?
I'm still working on my book. It's coming along. Like I said, it's in depth, but I just look at it as it may take a while, and it seems like it's in depth and taking forever. But I know that the more time I put into it, in the end, it's going to be worth it. And I really want to not just quickly hack through it and put it out there and then regret things I didn't do in it, things I didn't add to it.
You put a lot of detail. Everything you do, you put a lot of detail into.
So I want to make it so like someone has this book, they're like, wow, this is a lot of local history. Things you're not going to find in probably major books from people from other parts of the country or the world who don't really know San Francisco.
Yeah.
Because I'm able to go to the places, look, talk to the people, dig deeper.
And people are very fascinated with San Francisco history, so they might as well get the full scope of all the details.
Well, there's so much true crime history and,
I believe that.
And hauntings. We've seen them. We report hauntings here all the time.
Of course.
So, the book's full of that. But I'm not going to tell you what it's called yet or when. I don't know if it's going to come out this year or next year. I would like for it to come out by the end of this year, but I'm thinking that realistically it's more going to be next year to have the final product.
Well, all I can say, folks who are listening about this, be prepared for something different when it comes out than what you normally see.
Yeah, because when I do something, I kind of want to make sure I'm happy with it. Mm-hmm. I don't like to do a half job and then later go, I wish I had slowed down and done that differently or that differently. So that's why I'm taking my time, but it'll be worth it, I think.
Absolutely.
So besides that, a new Alaskan cruise in September. We're kind of going up through the Northwest Alaskan cruise into Alaska, some of the towns. We're gonna go on some ghost walks and heard some of the haunted history in some of these towns.
I don't think that area is covered very much with the paranormal.
You'd be surprised. There's books and there's actually ghost walks in almost every town.
Is there? Yeah, yeah. I don't hear about that area that often. So that's great.
If we might put together a paranormal conference cruise on Alaska.
Oh, that would be cool.
Or another cruise line maybe in the Caribbean.
Oh, wow.
So we're early inklings of thinking about what we could do. So you'd have a full cruise, but you'd have like maybe a 2-hour block each day on the cruise where we would give like lectures, authors, and then you would go on ghost walks when you go into shore.
That sounds very cool.
And set up maybe investigations at a couple of the places. So it's just something we're thinking about.
Well,
it's not going to be big. It's going to be small again, because you know us. We like to do small, intimate.
Yeah, smaller groups are better. But folks, if you're interested, keep listening to the show.
Yep, and keep listening.
And keep, keep up to date.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you say we get into the paranormal news?
Yeah, let's get into some news.
All right. Let's do it. And welcome back to the Paranormal News. What have you got this week for us, Verna?
Well, I actually have an article from Erie News Now. And this news site takes place in Erie County, New York. And it's an article by Tom Kowalski. And it says, local paranormal investigative group tells us what to expect from their Warner Theater ghost hunt. So they're going to be investigating an old theater. And as we all know, these old theaters, you know, they've been around for ages. And
I think when you sent me the article, I was looking to see where it was at, and I think it's Erie, Pennsylvania. Is that what it's the area?
No, it's not Erie, Pennsylvania. It's
where
supposed
it
to
at?
Be it's supposed to be Erie County, New York, I
oh,
believe.
It's in New York. Okay.
Yeah, Erie County, Western New York.
Got it. Okay.
Right. So anyway, and the theater looks gorgeous in the picture, but it's known for its bright lights and variety of shows, and according to some local stories, it also holds a haunted pass. So this is something that a local paranormal group hopes to uncover.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been two major claims, said James Tuhowski. He's a leader and founder of Erie Unknown, which is a paranormal group. He said one in the grand hallway have seen some type of apparition walk up the stairs to the balcony area. And another one, an old stagehand that used to work here, he passed away, and there's been claims of seeing him around the main stage area. James Tuhowski, a founder of Eerie Unknown, says that the Werner Theater has been on his list of places to investigate for years. So now his group is going to be the first to investigate the local landmark. But Tuhowski isn't alone on his hunts. He's joined by other eight investigators and a psychic medium. So what we want to try to do is be a legit ghost investigative group, said Scott Dunkel, who's an assistant investigator with the Eerie Unknown team. We're not trying to draw ratings like the people on TV, so we don't over-exaggerate when we come across something. When we go into a residence or a business, we try to...
What was that?
I know. What was that? That's what you hear. Exactly. He said, when we go into a residence or a business, we try to come up with some evidence to prove that what they've seen is true. And again, sometimes they come away with nothing. But as Jimmy Tuhowski always said, the ghosts are actors. If they're active and they want to speak to you, they will. Yeah. If not, sometimes you'll come away with no evidence. And we witnessed that so many times.
And that's a real ghost hunter, right?
That's a real ghost hunter. You don't always get everything, right. And actually, it's not just the paranormal side of Erie's history that interests Tuhowski. He said, we've been doing it for the 4 years that we've done about 60 investigations throughout Erie County and Western New York. Mm-hmm. And Erie has a lot of history to it. And obviously, the Werner Theater is probably one of the most popular locations. I've always heard that it was haunted, but never had the proof that it was. Erie's Unknown Investigation will be live stream on their Facebook page on Saturday, March 30th at 9 p.m. So everybody, if you want to take a look, it's going to be at 9 p.m. on Saturday, live.
March 30th?
March 30th, yeah. Okay. And
so there's still time.
Yeah, and Erie News Now's Tom Kohowski will also join the investigation to document the process. So he's going to be there too. So very cool.
So this is just about their upcoming investigation.
It's about their investigation.
I wonder what kind of history they found with the place. Because you know me, I'd be digging up as much history as I could about the place
sure they did their research.
I know a lot of ghost hunters, they would rather dig the history up after the fact, so they don't know the names ahead of time. They ask for people's names and stuff. And then when you get them, when you dig up the history, they think that's more convincing is that you didn't know ahead of time.
No,
especially for
I
a
don't
psychic.
Agree.
You don't want a psychic to know the history.
I don't agree. And the reason I don't agree with that is because when you research the history and you research the names,
yeah,
and you're in there and you're trying to communicate or you're getting evidence about something, it actually helps you to develop a rapport or a relationship with the place and the people and the former and the history.
See, I always thought, like, when we did it at the Fairmont, we knew the history beforehand.
Absolutely.
So when we were asking for specific names, I think if I was a spirit hanging around a hotel or something and someone started to say names that...
Familiar names. Yeah.
I would be more apt to take notice and maybe even try and respond.
Absolutely.
Versus someone saying, what's your name? Where are you from? Did you die? Those are common generic questions.
And also finding out the history about a place helps you to go to certain areas that where something happened. Because you'll know, because if you're finding out like a large hotel, something happened on the third floor. Let's go to the third floor. But if you don't know anything, you might have missed it.
Exactly. I think that makes a big, big difference.
Yeah.
All right, folks. There's another great article from Verna Wilson. Thank you, Verna.
Of course.
Excellent. All right. Now, I have, speaking of ghosts, this is a similar article. This is about poltergeist activity in Zimbabwe. It's a family in Zimbabwe that's plagued by a poltergeist. They say they're being tormented by a malevolent presence that has destroyed their lives. They said it's attributed to invisible, mischievous creatures by a local media outlet. It began 4 months ago in the city of Bulawayo. According to an unnamed member of the family... Let me see the word. Right there on the tip of my finger. Bulawayo. Bulawayo. According to the unnamed member of the family, the harrowing haunting started with their three children and had their heads. They had their heads shaved in the middle of the night. And following in the evening, one of the youngsters was stabbed in the leg with a knife while he slept.
Yikes.
They said they were all terrified. but they were clueless as to how it was happening. Or it's just a barber who has revenge on his mind. A revengeful barber ghost. I don't know. They say they've had been plagued by constant paranormal activity in their home since. They said it occurred regularly. There are lights flickering on and off. Doors and windows are opening and closing. There's all kinds of sounds and disappearance of kitchen items during the preparation of their meals. They said they actually asked for help from different prophets and churches, but the situation seemed to only get worse after each time they reached out for help. So that end, they said that they even enlisted help from a spiritual healer to cleanse the house. But that sparked a mysterious fire and only impacted the bedrooms of their home. So hoping to protect their children from the paranormal activity, they went to send them to live with their grandmother in South Africa. Now, suggesting the strange case could be that of a poltergeist, eerie events begin occurring shortly after their arrival. Now, back in Zimbabwe, the youngsters continue to be connected to phenomena as they stay at a neighbor's house, and they saw similar activity unfold at that location. Now, witness to the weirdness, Rurume Dilwayo observed that the children were sleeping in my living room when a teapot and cups from the display cabinet were mysteriously moved and used to hit the children throughout the night. And now, besides that, the neighbor offered another story, saying, "I'm convinced these unseen forces have one goal, and that's to kill the children."
Yikes.
As one might imagine, the family fosters similar concerns, which is why they turned to the media in Zimbabwe in hopes of finding a solution of the paranormal activity that's been happening. "We're at a loss," the family member declared. "There is no peace in our lives. Everyone is afraid of us. And we don't know where to turn. We're pleading for anybody that can give us help wherever they can." So it's interesting, though. Paranormal poltergeist activity is always connected with, a lot of times, with teenagers, with kinetic energy, you know, the hormones changing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting they mentioned when the kids went to stay with the neighbors and sleep there, it followed them there. So I think the kids are the source of the poltergeist kinetic energy.
They're probably attracting something that's, yeah.
At least that's what I think.
That makes sense.
Okay, I don't know why I pressed that button, but you'll hear it later. It's totally didn't match, but that's okay. So I think that's what it's connected to, is the kids, because that's usually where that weird energy comes from. And it moves things, it breaks things.
Now, how old were the kids, did they say?
No, I didn't say any of that.
Because if they were adolescents attract all kinds of weird energy. That's when they're at their peak with that?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of spirits are drawn to kids.
Oh, yeah.
Because of their energy, their innocence, and they're open. Absolutely.
That's right.
So you never know. Maybe, you know, they see and experience more through the children until they get older than they do adults.
Absolutely. That would make sense.
Yeah, that would. All right, folks. That's the paranormal news. And now we'll get on to our interview.
Yep.
Hello, is this Tony?
This is Tony. Hey, John, how's it going?
Hey, how are you?
Great. Verna's here as well.
Hi, John.
Verna, is that you?
Hi.
Or just your voice?
Yeah, that's me. Yeah.
Oh, good. So glad to hear from both of you.
Yeah.
It's been a couple years.
Thank you for being back on the show. Yeah, I actually figured it out. It was actually about 7 years ago. Can you believe that?
My God, you know, I have a hard time remembering all these things from so long ago, you know.
It actually did pretty good, I thought.
Yeah, I do remember most of the radio shows were very, very successful, you know, they were and fun to do.
Yep.
Fun to do,
Before we start, I told Verna this just a few minutes ago. Last week when I ordered your best of video, Creature Features.
Oh, yeah. I mailed that to you. You did receive it.
Yep. And I watched it. And ironically, after I finished watching it, I had a weird dream that same night. And it was on Fisherman's Wharf. You were on a dock. And someone said, oh, there's two small parcels from China for John Stanley. And they were wrapped in brown wrapping paper, and they were tied up with twine. And they had Chinese writing on it. And we kept trying to keep them from falling in the water. And then you opened one, and it said, only thing it said was to John Stanley, Hollywood Network. And that was it. I never knew what was in it. But I
what a dream.
I know. I guess it means, interpretation-wise, I looked it up, and it said it means something good is going to come to you, something new, something unusual, but something good.
Well, it's ironic. We did some material at Fisherman's Wharf. There was a Chinese wax museum. There's still a wax museum there today. We did a mummy. We did a what I called mini movies. They were short films that spoofed genre movies or horror movies. And this was The Mummy Rises with the owner of the museum there with me.
Wasn't it, what's his name, Rodney?
You mean the owner?
Yeah,
Ronald Fong. That was his name, yes.
Ronald Fong, that's right.
Well, I encouraged him to tell you that dream. I said, you got to tell him that before we start the interview, because there might be something in there for him. He needs to know.
You never know. Now you'll be on the lookout for that most unusual and great new thing coming your way. You never know.
Yeah. Well, it's really strange that you should have such a dream when it does relate to things that I did. We even went back, and I took all my so-called mini movies. We put them into one DVD, and we did some introduction work at the Wax Museum. The Wax Museum, there was also a Jack the Ripper story that we did there at the museum many, many years ago.
Is that DVD that you sent, is that the same DVD, the best of?
No, that was done a long time. That was done about 10 years ago. Or 10 or 12 years ago. So what you got was newly edited collection of material from some of my shows by a man named Tom Wersch. Yeah, he's described in the book, The Career That Dripped With Horror, in the opening chapter. And he even wrote a couple of pages of material about his involvement with me and Bob Wilkins when he was responsible for bringing this back before the public in the year 2000. We continued, Tony, to do those appearances every year until Bob's death in 2009. But we've even, there were some horror hosts who continued to do some, now that I think of it, Tom Wersch did a yearly Creature Con. And then Lord Bloodraw, are you familiar with him? He's
I'm not.
He's a horror host based here in the Bay Area. And in fact, on April 13th, we are going to appear together, Lord Bloodraw and me, on the stage of the Orinda Theater. And Nightmare and Blood.
Yeah.
And that's where we really want to begin the interview. One of the things we wanted to talk about beginning your film career was actually starting with your writing with some of your books. Now, one of your books, The Dark Side with Ken Davis, that you did with Ken Davis. You mentioned that
Ken was an artist at the Chronicle. He worked in the art department, and he and I became good friends, and we actually made a short film called Homecoming, which played at some film festivals. It was just a short 15-minute horror film but it did very well. And thanks to my job at the Chronicle, I got to meet a lot of the people connected with Star Trek, Gene Roddenberry, and actually sold him a story outline for Star Trek. Got paid $600 for it, but it didn't get made. The story was turned down by NBC as being, I don't know, anti-religious, they called it. It was a story in which the Enterprise landed on a planet where good was evil and evil was good.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting concept.
I don't remember much more about it. It was so long ago, but Gene Roddenberry was a very good friend. He wrote me many letters, and we stayed in close touch back and forth. Yeah, and we wrote Bogart 48, and we also wrote a novel about a detective, San Francisco detective, Carver Bascom. But when I started doing the TV show, I didn't have time to work with him anymore, and he went on to write a few other novels, but I was not involved with those. I was too busy doing creature features.
You don't need to sleep, John. Just stay up all night, right?
Well, the interesting thing about The Dark Side was that it was a film first, and then it turned into a novel because nobody was interested in the film. So have you ever thought about turning it into a film again, just because of the renewed interest in your work?
Yeah, how did you know that about Dark Side? Originally, it was called Dark Side of the Hunt. But we did shoot some 35 millimeter film, but we were never able to do much with it.
And okay. You wrote the Palm Sunday, which was based on World War III, also called World War III.
Napalm Sunday was my title for a fantasy novel about war. An American squad is in China. There's a war between America and China. And there's also a there are four or five chimpanzees who accompany the soldiers, and they have been trained to kill. And their names are like King Kong, and it was a very successful paperback. It was published by Avon as a paperback, and
it was
World War III. Didn't use my title, Napalm Sunday. Again, it was anti-religious.
I ordered it online this morning so I could have you sign it when you're in Arinda.
I'm sorry, what?
I said I just ordered that book online this morning so I can have you sign it when we go to the Arinda event.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah, we're going to be there.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, thank you, Myrna. Thank you. I'm so glad I'll be able to meet you both.
Yeah, it'll be great.
I'll have a table in the lobby. And please come up and introduce yourselves.
And,
absolutely. We'll be, me and Lord Bloodrawl will be up on stage before the film is shown. We'll talk, not too long, 15 minutes or so, about the making of the film.
Just before I forget, if those that want to get tickets for this event, again, April 13th, 2024, it's Saturday at 11 a.m. at the Arinda Theater, $15 are the ticket price. And if you go to creaturescon.com, you can get tickets through that.
Uh-huh. Very good.
Little plug for you.
Yeah, very, very good. Well, did you want to talk about the career that dripped with horror?
Yeah.
You know, I have a question about that. There was a ripped-off version of the film called Horror Convention, and apparently it was playing in England. And did you ever have a chance to see that and see if it was anything like your film?
What was the title again?
Nightmare and Terror.
Horror Convention.
Horror Convention.
Yeah, and it was like a ripped-off version of Nightmare and Blood, apparently. Somebody
you know, there was a British version of our, it was on, a, I think, a VHS tape that came out sometime after the film was released. And it may have been retitled slightly. It may have been the very same movie, but I'm not sure. It's kind of ringing a bell. So it could be that someone over there, without permission, it's coming back to me now, without permission, took our movie and gave it, released it on a VHS tape, designed their own cover and so on, and their own title. At least that must be what you are referring to, Verna.
I think so.
Those bootleggers.
Yeah, I think so. All I remember was that there was a version that was similar to yours, but it was called Horror Convention, and it was different titled.
That's
so
probably
yeah,
titles.
It's probably what you're referring to as well.
Yeah, I think it was the version that was done without permission. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, the character Malachi, he became a cult figure in South Korea.
Really?
What was the inspiration behind the character, and why do you think he appealed to audiences in that country and culture?
Wow.
Yeah, South Korea.
Well, I'm not sure. The great irony is that the actor who played Malachi died only, I think, 3 or 4 months after the film was released. He never got to do a sequel, or he was an excellent actor, and he had been a radio actor during his young years, and then went on and made a few films, not too many, and he lived on the outskirts of San Francisco in Marin County, and passed away. It was like he died within 3 months of the film being released. It was really sad.
That's bad. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you filmed the film in Fox Theater, which is absolutely gorgeous. I love that theater.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently there were stories about a ghost that you and the crew witnessed. Can you tell us a little bit more about the ghost of Fox Theater?
We had started to film there in late 1973, and Ken and I, Ken was a co-producer, he was the cameraman, and I was the director, and we decided rather than drive all the way home from Oakland, we would stay overnight, and we brought some bed rolls and things and pillows. And so after the first night of shooting, we set up to go to sleep in the lobby next to the candy counter or popcorn counter. And as I think it was around 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we heard a door open, and the door was down in the basement. There was a door that opened up and allowed you to walk down a corridor to the very end of the theater and up onto the stage or behind the stage. And we heard this door open, and then it closed again. And Ken and I looked at each other and said, you have to push a button to open it, but we're the only two people in this theater. There's nobody else. The cast and crew had gone home. And we went backstage even and looked around to see if someone was back there. We didn't see anybody, but one of those strange moments that you really can't explain.
Did you get any sleep after that?
It was the only night we slept there. We decided we're going to go home the next day, next night. Yeah, so we didn't stay overnight any longer.
I've just out of curiosity, I know you worked for the Chronicle for quite a while, right?
33 years.
So I would imagine you were probably working for the Chronicle during the Zodiac days?
Yes. In fact, what was the name of the man who wrote the book about the Zodiac Killer?
Robert Graysmith.
Yes, Robert Graysmith. And in the beginning, Robert Graysmith was a artist who did cartoons. Mm-hmm. He did the political cartoons for the Chronicle. They would run on the editorial page. And he set he set just a couple of feet away from me. He said,
oh, wow.
Next to a window overlooking Mission Street.
Oh,
and
okay.
So we became fairly good friends, you know. And there was no knowledge that he was going to become a writer who would write several books about true life crimes, starting with the Zodiac Killer. And did you ever read The Girl in Alfred Hitchcock's Shower?
No,
that was also by Graysmith, about a woman who served as a double in the shower scenes.
Yeah, for Janet Leigh, yeah.
For Janet Leigh, yes, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's written a lot of books, and he was a very interesting guy. The Zodiac Killer still remains somewhat a mystery.
Yeah,
there was a feature film made, I think, in 2007 or 2006, perhaps.
Yeah. That was a pretty good one.
The
Zodiac movie.
Featured some of the Chronicle. You know, the Chronicle, I grew up in Napa Valley, and when I was 10 years old, my father told me, I'm going to teach you the hardwood floor business. And for the next 6 years, laid hardwood floors. I nailed hardwood floors. I puttied them. I sanded the edges. My dad would do all of the major with a larger machine, but I would always do the edges in the closets. However, when I reached 17, I decided I'd had enough sawdust blowing into my face, and I wanted to be a writer. And I got jobs at a couple of Napa weekly newspapers.
Yeah.
And the high school newspaper, I was reviewing new TV shows whenever they came out. And so when I moved on, I actually went into the Army for 6 months, so they wouldn't be, I would never be drafted. I served 6 months and then 2 years after that. Once that was out of my way, I went to San Francisco State. And within 1 year, I had a job at the Chronicle as a copy boy, but they told me, we do not promote copy boys. It's a dead-end job, but you can vary your hours while you go to college, and it'll make it easier for you. So so within 9 months, I got a summer job on the Sunday date book, editing and writing stories. But it only lasted a few months, and then I went back to being a copy boy. And then Daryl Duncan, the editor of the Sunday Date Book, came to me and he said, John, we have one of our employees who is always getting drunk and he's missing a few days of work. In fact, he didn't come back to work after his vacation. And so he's been fired and we would like you to take his place.
You're like, okay.
And that was the beginning of a, 32-year stretch.
Yeah.
I also got to review movies. Kane Knickerbocker was the movie editor, and I started out by writing sample reviews. I'd go see a movie and write a review, and I'd put it under his paste pot on his desk. And he came up to me one day, and he said, John, I want you to – my wife and I are going to Europe, and I'm going to be gone for a few weeks, and I want you to review some of the fantasy and horror films that are going to be opening. And also I got to review many, many science fiction and fantasy books. The book editor opened the shelves to me and said, take whatever books you want to review. So there's where it went. And I soon had contacts at all of the studios in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Had contacts at the television networks. And I had some of my contacts were local in San Francisco with the affiliate stations, you know, the major stations. And sometimes the publicists would go with me down to L.A. and we would do 6 or 7 interviews over a two-day period. And I would come home with enough stuff to write for, you know, several weeks. And in all of my years, I did an estimated 800 interviews with personalities of motion pictures and television. Some of them were comedians. Some were singers, like Tony Bennett.
You had a broad spectrum. It wasn't just sci-fi, horror. You actually had interviews with a lot of other genres. And
yeah, I covered everything you could think of, crime, comedy series, interviewing Lucille Ball. That was one of the most incredible moments. My wife and I were in L.A., and we were leaving our hotel to go interview Lawrence Welk, the great history leader. And the phone rang, and it was my contact from CBS. And he gave me an address. He says, John, come to this address tonight. I can't tell you who it's going to be, but you're going to be in for a wonderful surprise. Well, we went there. It was Lucille Ball's home. She was doing some television specials at that time with Jackie Gleason. And Jackie Gleason eventually showed up. Dinner was served out in her backyard. And then after all of the, everybody had come on a bus except my wife and I. We had driven in a rented car. Everybody left. And so I had to turn to Lucy and say, Lucy, you ran Desilu Studios when Star Trek was produced. You and Desi had broken up. Divorced, and she had married a comedian. And I said, what was that like to be able to create such a great historic show? And she says, well, we made a pilot that was rejected by NBC and the others, and so we made a second pilot. And NBC called me one morning in early 1966 and said, we want to run Star Trek as a weekly series on Thursday night, but we need your approval, a promise that you'll make the shows. So Lucy called a staff meeting of all of her executives, and she told them the good news, and suddenly nobody in the room smiled. Somebody stood up and said, Lucy, don't okay the show. Gene Roddenberry spends too much money. He's too difficult to deal with. And everybody had the reasons why they didn't think Desilu should produce the show.
Yeah.
Lucy says she was sitting there in total despair. What am I going to do? I have to, you know, I have to make a choice. Are we going to do it or not? So she said, I remembered in 1939, I had come to RKO Studios, which ironically was now Desilu. In other words, the Desilu studio had once been RKO Radio Pictures. And she said, I had come to the studio and they told me my contract was up and I would not be renewed. And she says, I went over into a corner somewhere and just cried my eyes out thinking, oh, how awful that is. My career is over. Of course, she went on to MGM and television success. So she said, I didn't have the heart to tell those wonderful actors, Leonard Nimoy and William Shatner and all the others, that we weren't going to produce the show. So I called NBC and I said, you have my guarantee. You have my promise. We will produce the show. And I thought that was one of the most wonderful stories to hear from someone like Lucy, because most people don't realize how responsible she was for the coming of Star Trek.
You know, what's funny is after that, I know when Desilu was kind of dissolved and they sold it off after they divorced, that was like one of the one things she's like, oh, we never, ever should have let that go. We never should have let those rights go.
Can you well, yeah, Desilu produced Mission Impossible,
yeah.
Some other very successful series that ran for several years. But Lucy,
that must have been hard.
I'm sorry.
So that must have been hard for her though. Once they let it go, and they're like, "Oh, we should have really had just held on to that."
Well, yeah, I suppose so. What happened was, RKO was up. Desilu was up for sale. Okay, and it was right next to Paramount Studios. It was separated with a fence. A fence separated Desilu from Paramount Studios.
Yeah. Yep.
So Paramount decided, we're going to buy Desilu and tear down the fence, and we've got a bigger studio.
Yeah.
And when they did that, they had the rights to all of the stuff Desilu had produced.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Star Trek franchise set idle for, well, let's see, left television in 69, and the first movie was in 79, so 10 years or so, Star Trek was dead. It was just sitting in a closet, you know, the rights to it. Nobody had.
Gene tried to do a revival at one point. It just didn't work either. There was like a pilot shot, or they wanted to shoot a pilot, then they decided.
Well, what happened was Star Trek was on for two seasons, and then suddenly it was canceled. I guess the ratings were not all that great, at least as the ratings were recorded by what the studio took to be the ratings. However, the response from the public was overwhelming, and it was the first time in television history that a show that had been canceled by a network was suddenly renewed within a short period of time. So Star Trek came back for a third season in 1968 and 69, and then it was canceled. And one of the great sad moments when it was canceled, Ken Davis and I had written many story outlines. You know, Gene had bought one of them, but we had several others. And I got a phone call that the story editor wanted to see Ken and I. He was thinking seriously of purchasing some of our stuff. Could we please come down to L.A.? So I told Ken, and so we figured out a schedule for the following week we were going to go to L.A. However, another phone call came from my agent, and he said, I'm sorry to tell you this, John, but Star Trek was just canceled. There will be no more programs.
Your career could have took an entirely different direction had that gone through.
Absolutely, yeah. One will never know what like that could lead to, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Wow.
Oh,
so close. You were so close.
Yeah.
Man.
That's very close.
That would have been hard. We'd have to go back home and go, oh, man, I could have. Oh,
yeah.
So close. We were almost there.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Wow.
Well,
now,
I was wondering, talk about the career that dripped with horror.
Yeah.
Well,
I was going to ask you about that. In the foreword, you have a picture of you and Howard Duff.
Oh, yeah. He was making a television series, a crime series, and I just happened to be there. I think it was in 1966. And I just fortunately got that picture. I forget how. But,
telling Verna that when I was a kid, my grandmother grew up with Howard Duff in her neighborhood. He used to throw rocks at her, and she said he was a bully in the neighborhood.
Well, he was married to Ida Lupino.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I interviewed Ida after she had retired. I think she was in a recovery home somewhere. Anyway, she told some interesting stories about him.
Sure.
She really loved him. She just thought he was one of the greatest guys.
Yeah, he had quite a career, too.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
And people do grow up.
Yes, people do grow up.
People do grow out of it.
Somehow my grandmother still held a grudge after, you know, how many decades? That was weird. I just thought that was funny. Like, what? You knew Howard Duff? He threw rocks at you? What? She goes, well, I was only like 10.
Yeah.
I just thought that was crazy. Now, this is a sequel book to your previous book.
Previous book now?
This new book, The Career that Jerked with Horror, this is a sequel to a previous book you wrote.
Oh, yes.
Correct?
I was a TV horror host, which I'm sorry to say has sold out. In 2019, I sold the last of several thousand copies. And my movie guides, I had published 15,000 copies of the fourth movie guide.
Yeah,
and it sold out also. I couldn't believe it. Plus 1,000 hardcovers and 15,000 paperbacks, you know.
And this new one came out a couple years ago?
Yeah. The Career came out around, I guess it was 2022.
Yeah.
Now, Nightmare and Blood was playing for years in first-run theaters and drive-ins, and then it disappeared. Now it's been revived, and it'll be shown in Orinda Theater. So what do you think is the reason for the revival? Why are people interested in it now, and why do you think audiences would be interested now as opposed to years ago when it first came out? What do you think is a renewed interest?
One thing is there was a horror host who wanted to play it, and the film actually deals with a horror host. In other words, there was a takeoff on Bob Wilkins, who was the star of Creature Features here in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, from 1971 until I took it over in 1979. There was, and actually Malachi comes onto the set. There's a scene where Malachi comes on the set and has an argument with somebody named Dr. Unworth. And he was based on a real-life psychologist who had written a book called Seduction of the Innocent, in which he claimed that comic books were destroying the minds of young Americans, particularly horror comic books, crime comic books, and the EC comic books. I don't know if you're familiar with those. William Gaines was the editor. Harvey Kurtzman started out as an artist for EC Comics and eventually created Mad Comic Book, which, of course, became the most popular Mad magazine. It was altered from a comic book to a magazine after 21 issues because the dealers were not putting the comic book out. So if you made it a magazine, it was a totally different market and a different attitude. And Mad became the most popular magazine in American history, created originally by Harvey Kurtzman. So there's a lot of that. The Dr. Unworth character sort of captured a lot of that in the film. And I really, you know, I have to be honest, I don't know how it's going to hold up now. It's been given a high definition remake, so it's going to look, I'm told it's going to look pretty good, because sometimes old films begin to not look so good, you know, after 20 or 30 years.
Have you worked out a potential video release for it after that?
There was a VHS release, and then in 2004, I was able to get a high quality. a DVD of Nightmare in Blood. We were able to get a copy from where to move. You know, if you want to copyright something, you send a copy to the government in Washington. We were able to get that and make a copy of the film. That it was a much better quality than the original VHS tape.
Do you have an original print of that, or is that where that print was with Library of Congress?
Oh, I had a print, and that's apparently what they used to upgrade the quality. Yeah. And I've sold the DVD at my personal appearances off and on over the years, Nightmare and Blood. Ken and I did, for the 2004 DVD, Ken and I, we did a commentary. I'm trying to remember. It's been so long now. Because I know we did. Yeah, I think we did a commentary that went with the film.
What's interesting now is these days there's a lot of boutique labels that release new Blu-rays, and particularly one, Vinegar Syndrome, likes to seek out smaller films, independent films, horror films, genre films, and they really give them a really deluxe treatment. The packaging is amazing. They do extras. They come out and they remaster the film. I think your film would be a perfect film for Vinegar Syndrome to do a whole entire release package. I bet you they would love it. That's exactly the kind of movies they love to produce.
Is this a particular company that does this?
Yeah. Vinegar Syndrome. It's a
Vinegar.
Yeah, Vinegar Syndrome. It's a boutique. They call them boutique labels now because the studios are pretty much not even interested in putting out their own stuff. So these little boutique labels like Scream Factory and Vinegar Syndrome, they've popped up and kind of filled that niche for horror fans, sci-fi fans to take older movies, obscure movies people maybe haven't heard of in decades, and they remaster them. They bring people in to do their new commentaries, interviews, extras, and then they re-release them in sometimes limited quantities. Sometimes they'll do a full run. But it sounds like your film would be perfect for Vinegar Syndrome.
You know, I think you're right. And I think a decision could possibly be reached after the film plays.
Yeah.
I can talk to Tom Wirsch about going a step further, as you recommend, a whole new version of the film with some new footage maybe,
Exactly.
Yeah,
and after this, there'll be so much more of a big, even bigger audience because of the promotion after we're in the theater.
Oh yeah,
so
that's what's neat about these new releases. They kind of find a new audience now. A lot of these people are like, "Wow, did you see that?" And they'll order it. They'll blind order it just based on your genre and what you produce and what you're into. I guarantee you, a lot of people would pick it up just based on that alone.
Yeah, you could be right, and. I'll talk to my son about it, and I'll talk to Tom, and we'll see what the reaction is, when the film plays at the Arinda Theater, April 13th, 11 o'clock a.m.
11 a.m. $15 creaturescon.com.
And if anybody would like to order my book. It's on many websites, but if you would like the book signed, please order it on my website, www.stanleybooks.net, and they will receive a signed copy. In fact, there's a special signature page that's up front in the book. It's just for that purpose, for me to sign it to the buyer. So they would order it on my website through PayPal.
Yes, we're going to have the link on our website and with this podcast, so they can actually go to your site, order the book, go get the tickets on the other site. So that'll all the links will be there.
Go to the other sites, and there are, I have a list here of them somewhere. Wait a minute, I didn't.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, here it is. Yeah. They will not be signed if you go to Barnes & Noble or Books or eBay, Apple Tunes, Google Play, Walmart, Reader House, whatever. The book's going to be slightly different in format. Page Publishing was supposed to bring the book out and market it and so on. And the book is a little different. I don't know why they didn't just put the book out the way I had done it, but it's different, and some of the pages are not full.
Yeah.
Yeah, although it's the same size, and you get all the same pictures and so on.
But to get it seen, they have to go through stanleybooks.net, right?
Pardon?
To get it signed, they have to go to stanleybooks.net, though.
Right? Yeah, then they'll get a signed book, and they'll get it the way I had intended for them to get it. And they will be able to read some wonderful stuff about Lois and Clark, Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher,
yeah.
Ridley Scott, the director of Alien.
Yeah, there's an amazing amount of interviews in there.
Oh, it's
amazing.
Great. I was enjoying reading it last night.
Some Star Wars interviews with Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher,
yeah.
Billy Dee Williams, Gary Kurtz, who produced Empire Strikes Back, David Prowse. Oh, I saw David Prowse several times. I have a wonderful picture of him strangling me. he was really a wonderful personality. And
one of my favorite
writers are Ray Bradbury and Robert Bloch. Verna, I don't know if you knew this or not, but I published a collection of short stories by Robert Bloch. He became a close friend in the 80s. After he had been on my TV show, Lost in Time and Space with Lefty Feep. These were reprinted from Fantastic Adventures. There were eight old stories and one brand new story. And
wow.
Ken Davis did the artwork. He did a sketch for each story. In fact, in Career That Dripped with Horror, there are 7 pages of Ken Davis's sketches from my creature feature movie guide, from A to Z. For example, A is alligator or alien, and each letter of the alphabet, there's a monster or some kind of movie character or creature that is visualized in Ken's drawings. You'll also meet Julie Adams and Ben Chapman from Creature from the Black Lagoon, one of the best monsters films, I think, of all time. Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he made Conan the Barbarian, his first major feature film, I had a chance to talk to him. Oh, the book has so much.
Yeah, there's a
sure
lot.
Does.
There's a lot in there. When you mentioned Dave Prowse, I had to think about it, because one of my favorite Hammer Frankenstein movies is Frankenstein and the Monster from Hell. Which he was in. He was the monster.
Who were you talking about?
Dave Prowse.
Oh, David Prowse. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He was British. Yeah.
Yeah. He was the monster in that one. That's one of my favorite Frankenstein Hammer movies.
Oh, great. I'd like to see that. Oh, also, there's
favorite?
A chapter on a guy named George Stanley. He was my father's uncle. And he created the Academy Award, the Oscar. And there's a couple of pages devoted to how that came about.
Wow, talk about close to home.
Almost, yeah.
Oh, my dad loved movies, and when I was 3 and 4 years old, we lived in Oakland.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. he wasn't drafted because he was putting hardwood floors into new barracks that were being built for soldiers who were going to go fight in World War II. Finally, he was drafted. But we used to go to San Francisco to the Telenews Theater on Market Street, 5th and Market. Yeah. And right next to it was a second-run theater. We would see Western movies, crime films, low-budget movies primarily. Both theaters are gone now. They've been torn away. And isn't it ironic that, Anthony, that just a block away was the San Francisco Chronicle? I had no idea that I would end up working there, you know, 3 and 4 years old. And I still remember going with Mom and Dad to see the best years of our lives in 1946. And I just, being with my dad, I just developed a love for movies. And when I saw The Thing from Another World in 19...
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, man, that frightened the hell out of me. I was afraid to walk down a corridor in the house. something was going to jump out and get me. And I loved The Day the Earth Stood Still. Patricia Neal is trapped in the flying saucer, and here comes Gort, the robot. And the look of horror on her face was just, oh, it was just one of those moments you never forget when you go to the movie.
What's your all-time favorite horror movie and favorite sci-fi movie?
I think I just mentioned two of them.
Okay.
The Thing from Another World, the first version, and The Day the Earth Stood Still. I loved, The Creature from the Black Lagoon. Yeah. Another classic film. There are so many others. It's just hard to remember now. But those always have stood out in my mind, and they continue to do so.
Did you go to the Fox Theater here in San Francisco when it was still around?
Yes.
A lot?
Yes.
So you were probably a regular viewer.
1961, when Payne Nichols went to Europe, to see Judgment at Nuremberg, the world premiere. He told me, you're going to review some films. One of the films I went to see was on December the 7th, 1961, at the Fox Theater. I bombed Pearl Harbor, a Japanese movie. Of course, I saw other films there, too. My wife and I went to that theater in 62. We saw quite a few films there. And unfortunately, it was torn down a year later in 1963. It was a major blunder. I've always felt that theater should still be there. You know, it was beautiful. It was just a classic motion picture theater like nothing else you'll ever see.
I think the city should have stepped in and really helped save that. That's really, what a big loss that was to the city.
Oh, that was terrible. Even Herb Cain, years later, you know, the columnist, he said, oh, I should have come forward and fight against it, but he didn't.
He could have done it. He had enough readership. He probably could have had
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. He had the most read. He had the most read column.
His column. Loved it.
When I do research for my book, I look back and there's Herb Cain.
Herb Cain, yeah. He used to have an office right behind me at one point. And he used to come over and he couldn't remember something, and so he'd ask everybody, "Hey, can you help me with something?" But he was really wonderful. So all of the columnists who worked at the Chronicle at that time.
Yeah.
Were really just unusual personalities, you know?
I think that's what makes San Francisco unique, is because all of their columnists and writers were.
Yeah.
That's what made up San Francisco.
It was a time and place that's gone now. It's not the same anymore. But, boy.
Do you know, there was one woman who used to write a column. I think it was more lifestyle, maybe fashion, maybe socialite. Pat Montadon?
Yes. Yes, okay. I knew. Yeah. Oh, yeah, great.
She's still kicking around. I was thinking of having her on the show because she did her haunted house at the bottom of Lombard Street.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. She used to live in that house with her roommates, and they had a pretty horrible experience, suicides and all kinds of
boy. She would be a great guest to have on, actually.
Yeah, she was socialite.
Yeah, I would highly recommend that. Sounds good.
Now, one last person I want to ask you about, because
you're
local. When you did your mummy sequence in the Mount Wax Museum, there was the Anton LaVey wax figure, and then there was like a ritual, and I think one of the actresses you had in there came alive and followed you guys out of that part.
Oh, yeah, we thought we couldn't get the mummy up, so we turned to walk away, and then behind us, she gets up off the table. Yeah, and is coming toward us, and that's where it ends. You know, we walk out. And
did you ever meet Anton LaVey?
I'm sorry, meet who?
Have you ever met Anton LaVey in person?
Anton LaVey?
The guy who created the Church of Satan, he was a local. Herb Cain would write about him all the time.
You know, the name is very familiar.
He was one of the figures that you guys did that with. He was standing there with the beard.
I did meet him, yes. Anton LaVey.
Yeah, yeah. He used to keep live cats at his house, and he'd go to court over it. And he was quite the local
eccentric. Yeah. I think I did meet him a couple of times. I didn't know him too well, but, there's a vague memory of that. Anton LaVey.
Yeah. Yeah, people usually when they meet him, because he used to play the organ for the Fox Theater. That would be his thing. He'd play the organ.
Uh-huh.
So I wouldn't be surprised if you didn't run into him sometime or another.
Yeah, we did meet a couple of times, yes.
We did watch Preacher Feature.
Yeah, that's true.
I know we did since childhood.
Oh, really?
My sister and I.
You know, that was the great thing about... In 2000, when we started coming back together, me and Bob Wilkins, the fans that came would just sit there mesmerized. God, we're seeing them again, but we're here with them. We're next to them. And some of the same people would keep coming back. Every time we appeared together, there were certain faces. There they were. They never missed a show. Particularly at the Castro Theater, and the con. There were conventions at the Moscone Center just drew all of these people back, and it was just amazing to realize I had such an effect on these people when they were young, you know, growing up, and some adults. You know, it was always a mixture of people. Isn't it great that we can relive all of this again? And it lasted, you know, it's more or less over now, but it lasted a good 12 years.
That's a long run, though. That's pretty good.
It's a long run, yeah.
Yeah, that's that was a longer run than the TV show. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Anyway...
So they can come see. Now, you're going to be signing books, right, at the event in Orinda?
I'll have a table in the lobby, and I will have the book, and I will have my new DVD, The Best of John Stanley, for just $10. You can get that very inexpensively. And the book is $23.99, but I'll be selling it for a flat $20 in the lobby.
Great. So anybody listening, up to April 13th, Saturday, 11 a.m., Orinda Theater in California. $15 tickets. Again, creaturescon.com. You can get a ticket. And if you want to pick up John's book in person, you can. Or go to stanleybooks.net, and you can order one from John directly, and he'll sign it to you that way.
Okay, great.
Well, that sounds good.
That's great, Tony.
Well, thank you for taking the time to talk with us again.
Yeah, thank you for coming on again. It's been great talking
to you. We've been on for an hour.
Yeah, that happens every time. Right?
Yeah, time goes. I mean,
hey, if any listeners call and say they fell asleep, I'll send you some no-dose tablets. All right. You can send to the listeners.
I don't think anybody's going to fall asleep during this interview. There's too much good stuff on here.
Absolutely.
I hope not. Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk to both of you.
It's been great.
Very, very nice.
Next month?
Yeah, we'll see you in April.
Yes, I'll look forward to that. I really will. I'll see you in the lobby, okay?
All right, sounds good, John.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye. Take care.
Bye. Bye-bye.
All right, that was a really great interview, I thought. Didn't you think so?
Oh, it was fantastic. He's always so great to talk to.
Yep. He's had a great career. And just think about where his career could have gone, like when he went down for the television thing and then Star Trek was canceled.
These little almost moments.
Yeah.
We just get tense thinking about it. We go, wow, almost.
What if this happened?
What if that happened?
I mean, that's life, right? That's everybody's life.
Life happens that way,
What could have happened? But he's had a great...
He's had a great what has happened, and his almost happens are theatrical moments in themselves.
Yep. So I think anybody, if you grew up in the Bay Area watching Creature Features, whether with Bob or with John Stanley, come on down to the Arinda Theaters, see John's movie, and then hang out.
Yeah.
Get a book signed, say hello.
Yeah,
I think it's gonna be a lot of fun.
It's gonna be a great event. There's gonna be some really fun stuff going on.
Absolutely.
During that event. Yeah.
So again, folks, that's April 13th, 2024 at 11 a.m. It's on a Saturday. The film is Nightmare and Blood by John Stanley. It's either Arinda Theater in California, $15 tickets. Go to creaturescon.com.
And we'll be there.
We'll be there.
So we hope to see some of you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, folks. That's this week's episode. And I guess until next week, we'll say goodbye.
Yes. See you next week. Bye.
Royalty-free, copyright-free music by Kevin MacLeod and Ross Bugden.
Be sure to visit us at www.ectoportal.com. Check out our archives on YouTube and head on over for new episodes to ectoportal.podbean.com.